Right, I heard there's a few addicts in here tonight. Yeah? You know that feeling you get when you're waiting for the crack dealer and your arse starts going like that and you just want to shit yourself? I've just recreated it standing over there waiting to come up here. I'm not joking. Couple of disclaimers. I do not speak for Cocaine Anonymous. I swear quite a lot and I'll try not to, but I'm probably going to. CA doesn't have any opinions on outside enterprises. Me personally, I have fucking bundles. I don't make many friends in Cocaine Anonymous, and the reason I don't make many friends here is because I don't mess around with this stuff. This is life and death for me. Right, it ain't a joke, ain't a social club, ain't a dating agency. This is a life-breathing, life-giving, life-saving fellowship that I'm a proud, recovered member of. So let me introduce myself properly. My name's Richard E. from London. My home group is Thus We Grow on a Wednesday night in Richmond. You're all very welcome to come. Not only have I recovered as a direct result of taking the 12 steps in Cocaine Anonymous, but my friends, family, loved ones and acquaintances have also recovered from the madness and the chaos of my drinking and using. Not only are my family grateful to Cocaine Anonymous, but the police force and justice system in the UK are also very grateful to you. I've absolutely been inspired over the last 4 days. And I want to explain that to you. It's not because this organised has been organised in a fantastic way. It's not because the wonderful people that I've met. It's not because of the great speakers that I've heard. It's not because of the unity that I've seen. But it's because of this. I got up at 5 o'clock this morning because I don't sleep too well because of the time difference. In fact, I've had about 7 hours in 3 days, so I could fall asleep at any point. So just wake me up. And I went down to the lobby this morning and there was 3 or 4 blokes sitting down and I got talking to them. 5 o'clock in the morning. And what they told me was that they'd come all the way from Toronto and they didn't have enough money for a room. So they were sleeping in the lobby and they'd been sleeping in the marathon meetings and they'd been sleeping wherever they can, and every now and again the security's been moving them on, so they've literally had 2 or 3 hours sleep a night. I'm not going to embarrass you by telling you who you are and pointing you out to you, right? But you fucking inspire me. You inspire me, right? You. You are the lifeblood of Cocaine Anonymous and you are the next generation of sponsors. We need you. You reminded me this morning about what it's like to go to any lengths. Fair play to you. Fair play to you. Now, I'd like to tell you about lorries full of cocaine and suitcases full of money, but that would be a fucking lie. Right? Complete lie. I came to Cocaine Anonymous broken. I've spent nearly 19 years in and out, in and out, in and out. So I'm not somebody who came here and got it straight away and everything was hunky-dory the next day. Not my story. When I was 14 years of age, I was bunking off of school. I had my school blazer on and I could hear this bottle of scotch in the cabinet and it was going, drink me, drink me. Now my mum and dad was out, so I got in this cabinet and I got this bottle of scotch and I went like that. And it was horrible. My throat was on fire, my stomach was on fire, my head was going to explode, and I thought, I'm never touching that again. It happened. Didn't know it then, the phenomenon of craving just kicked right in. Now I've got my hand over my nose, I'm screwing up my face, I'm doing that with a bottle of scotch. And then I had my second great thought that day, which was to steal my dad's 3 litre Granada on the drive and go and pick my mates up from school. So I'm driving down the school, I can't see over the steering wheel, I've got 3 cushions trying to hold me up over the steering wheel, I'm driving down the school like that, absolutely out of my nut. My 3 mates got in the car over with the school blazers on, we got all the windows down, arms out the window, I'm doing that up the high street. And as I get to the top of my road, I've got the police behind me with a siren flashing. So I pulled up outside my house, I mounted the pavement. Now my 3 pals who would have stuck with me through thick and thin, jumped out of the car and went, see ya! And just legged it. So the police officer opened the car door I got the seatbelt caught around my leg and I fell on the floor. And he picked me up and he said, "Is this your car, sir?" "It must call Blazer, right?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "And what's your name?" So I give him my dad's name. And he said, "What's your date of birth?" I said, the 7th of 1936. He just looked at me and he said, "That makes you fucking 64. Right? Get in the back of the car." You see, I didn't realise it then, right? But that was going to be the pattern to my drinking and using for the rest of my life. I didn't know that. Because every time I pick up a drink or a drug, right, it don't end well. It really doesn't. I'd love to tell you that I had lots of fun out there, but that wouldn't be the truth either. You see, because what happened to me was that every time I picked up a drug or a drink, the prison sentences started. And for me, what happened was the sentences got more frequent and they got longer, and the time in between them got shorter and they got longer, and the time in between them got shorter and shorter and shorter, and they got longer and longer and longer, until in the end I'm running around on the street with a gun. Now at this point my illness wants to pop up and manifest itself in my ego, and I want to tell you about armed robberies, security corps vans, everybody hit the floor. But that ain't the truth. It was robbing women's handbags at cash points. It was stealing from my family, from my friends, from my loved ones. My drug of choice is more. More of what you got, then I'm going to fucking go and do my bit. You know that one? I don't have an off button. I've never said no thank you, what's in it, I don't want any, ever. Right? Do you have a thing over here called poppers? I don't know if you have them over here, right? So I'm in a rave scene, right, with a mate of mine. And there's a girl standing next to me and she's going... And I said to my mate, "What the fuck is that? That smells horrible." And he went, "That's called poppers." And I went, "Right." He said, "Don't touch that." He said, "It'll fucking need a blow off." I said, "No, it smells horrible. I'm not touching that. Kiss a bit of that, love." So I went... "Oh my God, my head's gonna fucking explode. What am I fucking doing? Oh, this is horrible. I wish I'd have fucking done that. Oh my God, I'm gonna fucking die." Kiss another guy, that love. I think they call that using against your will. I may be wrong, but I think that's what it is. So I end up on the street doing what we do, robbing, stealing, lying, cheating. And I end up getting a massive sentence. And it don't matter how many I've done, it don't really matter how long the sentence was. But it was long enough. And I'm in this prison. And I got the knock at the cell door. One of my mates. He said, "They're brewing hooch up down the church, right?" Now, I ain't had a drink for about 6 years by this point, right? "They're brewing hooch up down the church. Let's go down and let's have a drink." I said, "Well, I'm with you on that." So we flew down the church. We get into the church and they're all sitting in a circle. So I said to my mate, "Who's the one with the hooch?" And he went, "It's him over there." I went, "All right, mate." He went, "All right, mate." Welcome to the afternoon meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at Calderley Prison. My name's John and I'm an alcoholic. So I turned to my mate in my most pleasant voice. I said, "What the fuck have you brought me here for?" I didn't know I'd just been 12 steps, right? I got no idea what that is. And it said, 12 God steps on the wall, 12 God traditions over there, and I thought the mariachi band was going to be coming in, praise Jesus and all that. I thought that, but not for me. There's no way I'm staying here. And the day that I was released, they opened the cell door and they took me down to the gate. And I swore blind with every fibre of my being that I was never going to touch another drink or a drug again. And if you'd have put a lie detector on me, it would have come back saying, I'm telling the truth. Because I meant it. With every fibre of my being, I meant it. And as the gate opened, my mate pulled up in the car, and I got straight in the car, and I sparked up a spliff, because that's not really a drug. And then I cracked home a can of Tennent's open, and then I got the crack pipe out, and then I got the needles out, and I stuck one in me. It took me one day to go right back to exactly where I just left off 9 and 12 years ago. because I've got a progressive illness that gets worse. I don't go back to being 14 years old and that little drop of scotch in the car. I don't go back to that. I go back to what does it for me, heroin, crack, cocaine, benzos, and anything else I can stick in my body. So it took me one day. And I hit the streets running, doing what I've always done, robbing, stealing, lying, cheating. And I remembered one day, they have meetings, because of Calderley prison. So I thought, I'm going to go to one of these meetings. So I turned up at this AA meeting. Now, I'm not here to slag AA, by the way. I turned up at this AA meeting. This little old woman come over to me. She said, are you all right, love? I said, not really, no. She said, what's wrong? I said, I'm sticking needles in myself. I'm smoking crack cocaine. I'm on 200 mils of methadone, 7 mil of Lanzapine, Prozac. I've got the police chasing me. I'm probably going to go back to prison and do a life sentence. And she looked at me in the eye and she said, well, at least you haven't had a drink, love. It ain't funny. It ain't. When I went back out and I did what I've always done, lie, steal, rob, cheat, all the rest of it. When I came back in again and they said, get a sponsor who's got what you want. So I got one who was 8 years clean and didn't do fuck all. So that's what I wanted. To do 8 years clean and do nothing. They said, don't get involved in relationships, I got a bird pregnant. They said, think. I thought they said, drink. They said, easy does it. I thought that meant do fuck all. And I went back out. And I robbed, stole, lied, cheated. Until the day came that I sat on the couch in my front room. And by this point, I'd had two heart attacks, I'd had a stroke. My eye had dropped, my lip had dropped, my whole left side had gone. I was 7.5 stone. It was jaundiced yellow. And I was a shell of a man. I had a crack pipe in front of me. I had a bit of brown. And I had a 6-inch carving knife. And I was going. I'm out. I'm done. Now, this ain't a cry for help, right? I'm not going across. I'm going straight down. I'm out of here. So I sat down with a carving knife. Obviously I've done drugs first, come on. There's a bit of a story to go yet. Right, okay. So I got the knife and I put the tip into the top of my arm. And as the pressure went in, the blood started to come out. And it went through my head. If the police break in and I'm dead, the place is a bit of a shithole. Maybe you should tidy it up. I'm not insane, by the way. So I went round the house for an hour tidying up, doing the hoovering, doing the washing up. And I sat back down. Stop laughing, it's not funny, this is serious stuff. So I sat down and I got the carving knife out and I put it in my arm, and as the pressure went into my arm and the blood started to pump, it came into my head. Two police officers standing over me and one saying to the other, I'm afraid he's dead, Sarge. And the other one saying, I can see that constable, but look how tidy his flat is. All while I'm about to top myself. So I've imagined my body going down the mall, 21 gun salute either side, Army and Navy, the last post being played, because I'm that important. I was telling the sponsee that, right? I said to him, this is what happened, right? And I said, no, 21 gun salute either side, and this is what I've seen. And he just looked at me and he said, was you in the Army? No. I'm fucking insane, mate. Nuts! So I went into the meeting again. Bear in mind, I've got my eye down here, my lip down here. I'm dragging my left shoulder. And I walked in, and this woman, beautiful looking woman, walked up to me, and she said, this is what she said to me, right? You are stunning. Stop laughing, it ain't funny. I'm going to take you home tonight and I'm going to shag your brains out. That's what I heard her say. Will you stop laughing? This is serious shit going on here. What she actually says was, are you new, would you like a cup of tea? So a woman got up and crossed the floor to go and get a cup of tea. I'd already worked out how many kids we were having, where we were getting married next year. Woman went like that, I thought she went like that. I ain't delusional by any stretch of the imagination though at this point, alright? But I was just broken enough to maybe start listening. Now you see, by this point I've been in the rooms now 9 years. And I was told, you see the old geezer with the big book? He's a step Nazi. He's a joy boy. He's a thumper. Stay away from him. And I would go into the meeting and this little old boy would be going, happy, joyous and free, rocketed into a fourth dimension. And I'd get all embarrassed and think, oh, did he just say that? Bless him. Silly old bastard. I can't even get 3 days, right? And I'm slaughtering this geezer. So I would say to newcomers when they come in, see the geezer with the big book, stay the fuck away from him. He's mad. And then I would go out, use, drink, smash myself to pieces, come back in, and he was still sitting there like this. Happy, joyous and free, rocking it up. Oh, no. Blah, 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 blah. Drop me out. And I'd go out and smash myself to pieces, and I'd come in. And this time I thought, I need to ask somebody like him. Now, I've been to meetings for quite a while by this point, right? So I know when you can talk a good programme. I'll give an example of it, right? I'm in a meeting, it's one of them meetings where you've got to raise your hands. I hate them meetings, because they always seem to pick someone else. Or is that just me? It's probably just me. And when I'm in this meeting, and there's an old boy in there, he must be 38 years sober, right? And he never says a word. Ever. And all of a sudden, at the back of the meeting, he went... And the whole meeting stopped and looked at him. And he went, Tom. He said, hello, Tom, alcoholic. Did you know that I is in the word endless and we is in the word well? Thank you very much. And I went, wow, wow, pearls of wisdom. I'm in the meeting the next night, right? Julie, alcoholic. Did you know that I is in the word illness and we's in the word... Oh, Julie, wow. Because it's really easy to repeat what you heard last night in the meeting. I was told when I got here, right, watch what people do, not what they say. Thank God. So I followed this geezer to his own group. Now, when I got to his own group, he's outside the meeting and he's got his phone out, right, talking to newcomers, and I thought, that's a blag. I've seen that. You know the ones who want to make themselves look good in front of the rest of the group? Oh, yeah, I'm just taking a newcomer's number. So I thought, oh, I ain't having that. So I grabbed the newcomer and I said, does he call you? He said, call me. He drives me fucking crazy, the geezer. You know, stop calling. And I spoke to a few other newcomers. They went, oh, don't talk to me about him. He's ringing me at 3 a.m. asking me what I'm doing. I thought, this geezer's doing what he says he does. And I went into the meeting and there was his sponsor, his sponsor, his sponsor and his sponsor. Up to 46 years at the time. They was all dressed becomingly. They was putting the chairs out. They was putting the ashtrays out in them days because you could smoke in them days. And I thought, well, I want some of this. I really want some of this. I can't live with what I've got anymore. And I said to this geezer, will you sponsor me? He just looked me up and down and he said, are you willing to go to any lengths, Richard? Because he knew me by this point, and I said, I will run round Kingston town naked with a red fucking dicky bow on if that's what you want me to do. Please don't ask me to do that though. Because there's conditions going on here, alright? I'm broken, but not that fucking broken. It's said, this is what I want you to do. Every morning you're going to get on your knees and you're going to invite a God into your life of your own understanding. I went, whoa, 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 whoa. Did you just say God? He went, yeah. Have you had God in your life every day so far? I said, no. He said, how's it fucking going? No. Not that great. He said, well, you need one then. He said, you got a problem with God? I said, well, yeah, sort of. I've never been to church and I've done any of that stuff. He said, do you believe I believe? I said, I believe you believe, yes. He said, okay, ask Billy's God every morning to keep you clean and sober. At the end of the night, it's only right you get down on your knees and thank Billy's God for keeping you clean and sober. I said, okay. Well, when I've been and done that, that was mad. Right? You know that one where it's my first day of praying, right? Never done it before. So obviously I'm shutting the curtains, right? I might have a few mates in the cupboard as well. Because I'm embarrassed to get on my knees and invite a power greater than myself into my life. But what I'm not embarrassed of is going into an off licence or a shop and jumping over the counter with a ball-paint hammer and smashing you over the head to get money out of your till because I smoke more crack. But yet indoors, I'm embarrassed. So he said, what I want you to do is I want you to write 10 things down every morning that you're grateful for. And I looked at him and went, are you fucking kidding? What am I grateful for? And he went, well, look at it this way. Did you know that some third world countries, they get up every morning and walk 3 miles to go and get a bucket of stagnant water? Do you know 30% of the world's population are going to go to bed under the stars tonight without a roof over the head? 40% of the world's population have got no electric, no gas, no running water. You've got all of that, you selfish prick. Oh, selfish? That's a bit strong, isn't it? He obviously don't know who I think I am. So let me tell you this, Richard. Grateful addicts and grateful alcoholics never pick up. Period. Never. So that's what I want from you every morning. I want you to pick the phone up every morning at 7 o'clock on the dot because I've got 30 other sponsees and I ain't got time to fucking babysit you. You will be on the phone with me at 7 o'clock every morning. So 7 o'clock every morning, I ain't got a phone because my... Do you have cash converters here? Right, because my phone is... We call it crack converters in London. My phone's in crack converters again. So I've got to go walking down the phone box half a mile every morning, 7 o'clock to pick the phone up, right? A week later, he ain't picked the phone up once. I'm a little bit put out by it, to say the fucking least. So I get to the meeting, right, the home group, and he's standing there chatting to a few people, and I'm pushing people out the way. Because I'm going to get to him, but he's getting it, right? Getting it. See you. You ain't picked the phone up once. He went, what did I say to you? I said, you said... ring me at 7 o'clock every morning on the dot. He said, yeah, I didn't say I was going to pick it up, did I? That's the sort of geezer I'm dealing with here. Happy, joyous and free. Rock it. Stick it up your arse. He said, you're going to have a home group, right? And the only two ways you're not going to show up is, one, if you're on holiday, and two, if you're dead. And if you're dead, I want a letter from the coroner. I ain't going to pull any strokes with this geezer. He said, you're going to stand outside the meeting and you're going to hold your hand out to newcomers. And you're not going to get on the phone the next morning and bitch and moan about how bad your life is. You're going to ask them how they are for a change. That was great when I first did that. Hello, my name's Richard. You're a newcomer, aren't you? Oh, yeah, I'm a newcomer, yeah. How's it going? Well, I've only been in two meetings and I'm really good to... Listen, forget that, right? My life's shit, mate. Honestly, my life is absolutely crap. My relationship's gone down the pan. My dog's died. I can't work out how come newcomers don't want to pick the phone up to me anymore. So he said, stop talking about you and ask them how they are. I said, okay, I can do that. He said, I want you here half an hour early every week and you're going to leave half an hour late and you're going to be the one doing the washing up. I said, why? He said, because they're the people who stay. You see, because what I've always done is, right, I'm a taker. Always have been. You see, I will turn up late to your meeting. I will drink your tea, your coffee. I will eat your biscuits. I will chat your birds up and I'll fuck off early. And maybe if you're lucky, you might get a dollar in the pot out of me. Because I'm a taker. I used to sit in meetings for years and I used to say, I can't get it. And it was pointed out to me there's only three things to get it. A sponsor and a big book and a spiritual awakening, the rest is about giving. I didn't know that. I had no idea about that. I didn't know that if I gave, I got. In the giving, I would receive. I didn't know it. He said, I'm going to be around your house on Tuesday and we're going to go through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And on Tuesday afternoon he came around my house and we went through the preface, the foreword, doctor's opinion, there is a solution, what about alcoholism? Step one, no writing, no handouts, no questions. It's all in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We went through agnostics, we went through how it works. And I knew I was on step four because I had a pen and paper in my hand and he said, no, you're on fucking step four. I said, how long have I got? Because I heard it takes 18 months to do step four. Like I was going to get away with that. He said, you've got 3 days to do it, and if you don't do it in 3 days, fuck off. Because I ain't going to watch you die. How desperate are you? I said, I am dying. So this is how I did my step four. Monday night, from 5 o'clock till 9 o'clock, I sat there, and I treated it like a part-time job. I did 2 hours, and then I went and had a cup of tea, come back, done another 2 hours. And then Tuesday night I did the same, and Wednesday night I did the same, and it was done, and by Thursday it was back around my house, we did 4, 5, 6, 7. I got down on my knees. I asked for all these defects to be taken away from me. And then he gave me a step eight, and it's the only time in the book that he diverted from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is the reason why. He said, you are going to write a list out, because we have a list from your step four, and you're going to write 3 columns out. The person, the harm that you did, and you're going to walk a mile in their shoes. So I had to write a letter from the people that I'd harmed to me. Now I can stand here today and tell you, right, I put my family through hell. And that's a bit of a statement, isn't it? Put them through hell. But here's what came out of it when I sat down and wrote step eight from my mum to me. We had to travel up and down the country every other week to watch you in a prison shaking and shivering and rattling and rolling and jaundiced yellow. We were full of guilt and shame that we'd done that to you. Every time there was a family do, we had to tell them you did loads again. Apparently I've been to Australia 15 times. Once of prison, more like. We couldn't trust you in the house. We had to lock everything up. We actually got to a point where we hated you, our own child. We had to take the keys off of you. So that you couldn't get into our house. You stole our peace of mind, you stole our security, and you stole our relationship with our son. And I wrote that out. And what happened for me was what this program promises. Change. Because at that point, I changed. Because I've only ever seen the damage that I've done from my eyes. I've never seen it from yours. And at that point, I realised the damage that I'd done from other people's eyes. So when I went and made amends, the remorseful mumbling that I was sorry wouldn't fit the bill at all. I know why I was going to make amends, and I went out and I went about it with a passion and an enthusiasm to put the rights, to get this put right, to clear up the wreckage of my past. It took me 9 years to be able to make financial amends. He came back round my house about 3 or 4 days later. And we did 10, 11 and 12 and he said, get off your arse and go and give it to somebody else. Do not let me catch you in a meeting bitching and moaning. That's not what a meeting's for. Right? It's not. A meeting is for you to share the message of recovery. And then he asked me, what is the message you've been through the 12 steps? And I said, well, it's the message of the 12 steps, isn't it? And it's like, message to work with newcomers. And he said, no, it's not. No, it's not. It's in the 12th step. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of this step, we try to carry this message. Not your message, not my program, this message. That you've had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps and you've lost the obsession to drinking, you never have to do it again, and more importantly, you're going to be happy while you're doing that. That's the message that you're going to carry from now on. And I set about it with a passion and enthusiasm that I'd never been able before to be able to muster. And I went round meetings like that with a big book smacking people over the head. I was like, yeah, I may have upset a few people along the way, I've got to admit. I was like a vampire trying to suck the spiritual badness out of them. Literally. Nobody have ever had anything to do with me whatsoever. I think I got one up to step three. And then he sodded off and got a better sponsor. Because I was a bit too militant, apparently. And then I met a fella in a meeting, and he was pretty broken. And he was living in a flat with his missus and his kid. But they'd left. And he ended up sitting in one corner of the flat in literally a two-foot space. And he was pissing into bottles because he wouldn't go to the toilet. And he was snorting cocaine and drinking. And he was dying. And he came up to me and he said, "Will you sponsor me? I'm broken." And I said, "Absolutely, it'll be an honour and privilege. Are you willing to go to any lengths?" And he said, "Richard, I will do anything that you ask me to do. Anything." Within 3 months, he'd gone through the 12 steps, the concepts, the traditions. And he invited me out on a picnic because his missus and his little girl had come back into his life. Now, his little girl was about 8 years old, right? She knew I did something with Daddy, but she weren't sure what. So I went for this picnic with him and his wife, and his little girl was about 8 years old. And she said to me, while I was sitting there, "Can you take me through the park to see the deer?" I said, "Absolutely, come on." And I got her by the hand and we started walking. And all of a sudden she got a little case out. And I said, "What you got there?" She said, "This is a Duffy CD." And I went, "Right." She said, "Thank you for giving me my daddy back," and gave it to me. That's the buzz that I've wanted all my life. All my life. You know that hole in the soul that we have? It's program shaped. That buzz that I got from that little girl wasn't there next week. It wasn't there a month later. It wasn't there a year later. It's now there 11 years later. And I still remember that little girl giving me that. Before I turned up in recovery, my dad rang me one day and he said, "Richard, your mum's in intensive care in hospital and she's dying. I've been up here for the last 5 days and I haven't slept, and she's in a room hooked up to a machine and she's on her last legs." He said, "But I can't stay anymore." He said, "I need to go home and sleep and I need you to be here." I said, "Don't worry, Dad, I'll be there." So I stole a car and I went and saw the drug dealer and I bought crack and heroin and a few cans, and I got to the hospital and I said, "Dad, you can go and chill out now." So he left the hospital. And I thought, I'll just go and crack a can open and just have a quick pipe. So I went downstairs and I cracked open a pipe and a couple of cans and I stuck a needle in myself. And I woke up 4 hours later and I went upstairs and the nurses were standing around my mum's bed and she died on her own. So I went and had another pipe and I stuck another needle in myself. Because that's what I do. I bury my head in the sand. My dad had to sort all the funeral arrangements out. So while he was sorting all the funeral arrangements out, I thought it would be a good idea to take my mum's jewellery, which he'd bought her over the last 45 years, and take it down to crack converters and pawn it. I stole that jewellery that he'd bought her over 45 years and he'd just lost his wife. And then I couldn't face what I'd done, so I didn't go back. And I let him bury her. Him sort it all out on his own. And I loved that man. You see, when I drink and use, I become disgustingly, dangerously, antisocial. I'm the real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Except the difference for me is Dr. Jekyll left the building a long time ago. And I absolutely broke that man's heart. Broke his heart. So as a result of the mends, I sent my dad a letter, because it's seldom wise to approach people who are still smarting from our injustice to them. And I sent him a letter and I said, "Dad, I'm clean." And he sent me a lovely bit of A4 paperback, about that big. And it had written across it in black marker pen, "Fuck off and die." And I went to my sponsor and I said, this is what he's written. And he said, what I want you to do is every month on the dot, I want you to send this man a postcard and I just want you to put on it, I'm still clean and I'm still sober. That's what I want you to do. So I did that. Five years later, I got a call from the hospital saying his dad's in hospital and he's dying. And we need you up here now. So I went up the hospital after not seeing him for 5 years. And when I got there, he didn't recognise me. And I hardly recognised him because he'd put so much weight on for all the drugs that he was taking and he'd bloated. And I sat down by his bed and I said, hello, Dad. And he looked at me and he said, you're Richard's mate, aren't you? When you see him, tell him he's a no-good shit cunt and don't want him anywhere near me. He thought I was a friend. Didn't recognise me. So I went out into the hallway and his mate came out and his mate said to me, listen, he didn't recognise you, bitch. You've put on a lot of weight, you're a different person now. But I'll go and tell him who you are. Now, my dad was proper old school. So his mate came out into the hallway and he said, Richard, he wants to talk to you. So I went into the hospital room and I sat down. And I went, Dad, it's me. He said, I can see that. Have you still got that drill you borrowed off me 5 years ago? And then every day for the next 6 weeks, I visited him in hospital. And I want to tell you the importance of working with people and what that can do. So I'm in the hospital, right, and me and my dad have always agreed that if it ever comes to the point where someone's got to wipe our arse for us, right, we want out. Out. And he's sitting in the hospital, he's still got his faculties, but both his arms are not working, both his legs are not working. And he sat there and he said to me, Richard, I want you to kill me. I went, well, Dad, not really. Is that what you're asking me to do? He said, you promised me that if I ever got to this point, you would put a pillow over my head and you would kill me. And he was right. That's what I agreed to do. So I moved him forward and I took the pillow and I stood there and I pluffed it up. And I said, are you sure this is what you want? And he said, Richard, I just want to die. Please, let me die. And I got the pillow. And as I leaned over to put it over his face, the phone went. I went, hello. And the sponsor, he said, I'm in Tesco's and some bird's just run over my foot with a shopping trolley. Hold on, Dad. This better be fucking good. You better have done some infantry and columns round this, mate. Because I'm writing a bit of something here.
What are you up to?
Don't ask. What's going on? He just helped save my life, Dad, Kizza. And I looked at my dad after I come off the phone and I said, Dad, let's have some more tests done. Let's put it in the hands of the doctors and let's see what happens. And about 10 days later, I was sitting there and they said, it's the machine that's keeping him alive now. What do you want to do? I said, turn it off. Turn it off. And he said, are you sure that's what you want to do? I said, absolutely. He said, the chances are he'll be dead by the end of the day. And I said, okay. And I sat there and I held his hand. And I told him how much I loved him. And I told him what a bastard I'd been. Broke my heart. Fucking Cocaine Anonymous allowed me to do that. Cocaine Anonymous allowed me to be there holding his hand when he died. Because when she died, I weren't there. That is what's on offer in Cocaine Anonymous. That. The ability to be there when I need to be. So I'm about a month into recovery, right? And they keep talking about this God thing. And I was like, I'm still not sure about the God thing. I'm praying in the morning, praying at night, but I'm still not sure about it. So I thought the best thing I could do, right, was go around all the churches and see if I could find God. So I'm in a born-again Christian church, right, and they've got the guitars out and they're doing all that and tambourines are going. And now I'm in the back of this, like, church, right, and I'm clucking off of benzos at the time, so I'm doing this. And they're obviously all thinking, he's getting really into it, man. It was not pretty, I'm telling you, it was not pretty. So I'm going around all these churches. I've gone to this Catholic one, this Protestant one, this Christian one, born again Christians and Papist and you name it. And on Palm Sunday, I walk into a Catholic church. I didn't know it was Palm Sunday, it just happened to be Palm Sunday. And they're all dressed up and there's about 200 people going into this church. And down the front there's a geezer with a big pointy hat on and the staff. I mean, it must have been important. And I'm sitting at the back and I'm thinking, if I don't get God, I'm going to die. I need help. Where the hell am I going to get God? Because I'm not feeling this. And as I'm sitting there thinking this, I'm in tears. He's invited everybody to walk down the aisle to get bread and wine. And I'm sitting there thinking, I need to get God. I don't know how I'm going to find God. What am I going to do? If I don't get God, I'm going to die. I just know I'm going to die. And I thought, join the queue. So I joined the queue. And as I got down to him, he gave me the bread. He didn't give me the wine the time, bastard. He gave me the bread. And I went back to my seat, and I'm sitting in my seat, and I'm crying. Oh, I need to find God. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then everybody got up to leave. Now, there's great big massive doors, right? Higher than that. And he's standing like,
thank you, thanks very much for coming. Thank you.
So I thought, I'm going to slip out here, right? So I went to go to slip out, and he grabbed me. I went, he said, what are you doing here? I said, oh no, I'm trying to find a power greater than myself. I don't know. And he said, you do realise you might not find him here, don't you? And let me go. I'm walking down the road. I thought, if I can't find God in the Catholic Church on Palm Sunday, I am fucked. I am fucked. So about 4 days later, I'm in my local town. I've got a commitment, tea commitment. And I'm standing in Sainsbury's.
Herbal tea, black tea. You know how OCD we get with it. Jaffa cakes, chocolate cakes. I can't afford me rent, but I want you lot to love me, obviously.
And I'm standing in Sainsbury's, and all of a sudden, behind me, I can feel someone muscling around, and I turned around, and it was the priest, without his gear on. He went, hello, how are you? I said, I'm fucked. Thanks for asking, though. I said, anyway, what are you doing here? He said, I've got a tea commitment on a Friday night. Didn't you understand that? I said, no, I didn't. Wow. He says, you do realise, right, that God's not lost. You are. So why don't you get down on your knees in your front room and invite God into your life and he'll come and find you. And I said, you know what, I can do that. And then every day since then, I've got on my knees and I've invited a power greater than myself into my life. It's the God of my understanding. And every night, I thank that power for coming into my life and keeping me clean and sober. So I'm about 5 years now. And I'm in a meeting, and I've done the share. And a bloke's come up to me and he's got a black plastic bag and he said to me, I don't know who you are, but I've heard about you and I'm ready to do the deal and I need your help. I said, okay, what's with a black plastic bag? He said, I'm living in a park at the moment. The wife's kicked me out, the ex-wife. I've lost my house. I've lost everything worthwhile in life and I'm going to go and sleep in a park tonight. He said, I've been doing that for the last 3 or 4 months. I said, okay, ring me tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock on the dot. I was going to do it if he wanted to pick the phone up, but I thought, no, I can't do it. So ring me tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock on the dot. So 7 o'clock in the morning, he rang. And I said, stay where you are, and I went and got him, drove halfway across London. And I picked him up. Now, at this point, me and him disagree, right? You see, I say I've 12-stepped him, he says I kidnapped him. and I brought him back to my house and he sat on the couch and he was detoxing, and I would say, there's a car outside, you're going to a meeting. And I would have sponsors on a conveyor belt turning up in their cars. I said, listen, mate, you're going to a meeting, you're going to a meeting, you're going to a meeting. And within 2 days, he'd gone through the 12 steps because he weren't getting away. And he lived on my couch for about 3 months. And after about 3 months, he'd saved up enough money to buy himself a little van. And he was going out to work with this little van. And at 6 months, he started his own little company up. And at a year, he met a girl in a room who was also about a year. And he married her. And he asked me to be best man at his wedding. And then 3 years later, they had a little boy, Jack. And they came to me and they asked me to be godfather to their little boy. Right? I'm a no good junkie scumbag that you wouldn't want anywhere near you. And they asked me to be godfather to their little boy. Wow. Cocaine Anonymous done that. The 12 step program done that. I didn't. So what happened with the priest? So about 9 years, I was getting on a train one day. And I was a bit rushed and I just about got through the door. And as I sat down, I looked opposite and the priest was sitting there with a big smile on his face. He went, hello, how are you? I haven't seen him for 9 years, right? Now, you know when you meet people and you do a chair to them? Hey, mate, how are you? Right, this is what I'm doing, 12-step program. Don't ever do that on a date if you're new, right? Because you will get a woman say, you stuck what up your where? It's not conducive to dating, believe me, it's not. And I thought, do you know what, I maybe need to let him talk. I said, how are you? He said, do you know what, I'm in a really bad way. I said, why, what's up? He said, all the stuff I've been doing at church with my congregation and the community stuff has taken over the work that I did with alcoholics and addicts, and that's become more important to me, and as a direct result of that, I'm in trouble. I really am in trouble. And I said, well, so you're not stuck in the middle of a triangle, a circle and a triangle, then doing the unity service and recovery. He said, well, I'll go to a few meetings, but don't really do the rest of it. And then he asked me to sponsor him. And I said it would be an honour and a privilege. Cocaine Anonymous done that. The 12 steps done that. There's a man that helped me at the beginning and I couldn't repay him. And 9 years later, that's what I got a chance to do. And he's still about today and he's gone back to working with alcoholics and addicts. And there's a man who knows more about God than I ever could. But what he forgot about was how important it was to work with others. Because that's what we do here. So what happened to the bloke that I was sponsoring with the little girl? With the CD? Whatever happened to him? So, with your permission, his name is Will. And it's his 10-year birthday tonight, and I'd like to give him a chip. Cocaine Anonymous done that. The 12-step program done that. I'm just a road sign. I say go that way, and that's all I can do. But I'm a grateful, proud, recovered member of Cocaine Anonymous. And I want you to know this, right? Somewhere in a detox unit at 2 o'clock in the morning, there's going to be a bloke clucking his tits off. He hasn't slept for the last 4 days. He's going to be shaking. He's going to be shivering. And his life has gone down the pan, and he's not going to know what to do. He's going to have no hope in his life. And he just wants to die. And someone is going to give him the CD of this World Convention. And I think the greatest gift that we can give to that man is the gift of hope, that he can recover. Not recovering. he can recover. And I want you I would like you to help me show him that he's not alone at 3 o'clock in the morning in that detox. Let's say hello to him, mate. There's a lovely bit in the book. I'm not going to tell you where it is because I wouldn't rob you of the opportunity to find it. And it says this: I may have seemed to lecture and I may have seemed to give an advice, and if that's so, I'm sorry, because I don't always care for people that lecture me. But what I've related here is based upon actual experience, and some of it's been painful. That's why I'm anxious that you understand and avoid these unnecessary difficulties. So to you out there, may soon be with us, and say good luck and God bless. What have I got in my life today as a result of this stuff? I've got the car and I've got the business, and I've got the money, and I've got all the material stuff, and I've got sponsors, and I've got to be a godfather, and I've got all that. Strip all that away from me, every bit of it, and this is what the 12-step program's done for me, right? Listen to this. Really carefully listen to what I'm now going to say. When I got up this morning, this is what I heard when I got up this morning. Fucking wicked, isn't it? Hey? Isn't that wicked? This is what it used to be like, right? Any methadone anywhere? Any pills anywhere? I know, I might have a bit of methadone in the cupboard, and I think I've done it when I got out of the piss at 2 o'clock this morning. And I've got a few Valium in the cupboard. And I saw I'd done them yesterday. I'll go and see Tia. I'll go around and see the old man. Shit, he's locked the door. He won't even fucking let me in. Maybe I can get a tenner from somewhere else. No one wants to give me any tip. I'm never going to fucking get up. I ain't even got out of bed yet. If you're new, I want you to understand this. You will get a bit of grace, and your head will shut up. But don't believe the lie. The debating society ain't gone anywhere. It's just planning its next move. Right? That's all it's doing. If you're sitting in that detox and it's 4 o'clock in the morning and you're shaking and you're shivering and you can't see no way out, believe me, we can recover. Believe me, there's hope. Believe me, you're not on your own. Thank you for letting me share.